Szymanski and Pierce. We have the first bill. We have 8 bills on the calendar today, ladies and gentlemen. The first one we'll take up is a second hearing on Senate Joint Resolution Number 5. It would be my hopes of moving that bill on today unless the committee deems otherwise. Then we'll take up Senate Bill 194, an act relating to judicial review of school board's non-retention dismissal of teachers, and we have staff here to go over that bill. Then we're waiting for a committee substitute to come from legislative legal. We've got it on Senate Bill 255, Senator Kelly's bill, establishing a special arbitration commission for claims related to the Valdez oil discharge disaster. And the Attorney General, Doug Bailey, will be here to explain that bill. Senate Bill 226, relating to misconduct involving possession of a firearm by a person who commits criminal trespass while intoxicated or under the influence of drugs. And Senator Binkley will be proposing a CS to that particular bill. SJR 20, which will be a second public hearing on amendments creating dedicated motor fuel taxes. And you heard this, the committee heard this on Thursday, and there's a CS in your packet for us to look at today per the committee's instructions. Senate Bill 225 is an act related to access to criminal records. Will be put at the bottom of the calendar, pending information from Senator Duncan's office, but we will take up Senate Bill 228 and 229 today with memos in your file on those two bills. So with that...
Madam Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Before we move into bills, maybe we can do a little housekeeping. Either do it now or at the end of the meeting.
I don't wish to do housekeeping now, sir. We have a full packet of people here. We have lots of folks that have traveled. We missed Tuesdays, and so I would like to get on to the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution Number 5.
Okay, well, let me just say that we do have a full calendar hearing. By the time we get down to it, we may lose a quorum, so that could be tough. The purpose of the discussion was, what I'd like to do is make a specific rule of the committee, which we adopted other rules of the committee.
Okay, Chairman isn't willing to take that up right now, so we have a full committee and I'd like to get on to it. Is there someone here who wishes to discuss? I believe there's someone here who wishes to testify on Senate Joint Resolution Number 5 in the audience. It's my understanding there was a sign up on that. Nobody signed up? Is there a committee discussion on Senate Joint Resolution Number 5? We have a committee substitute in your packet. It's my understanding we've adopted that committee substitute. Mr. Christensen, has the committee adopted the committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 5?
No.
Can I have a motion for that committee substitute, Senator Halpern?
So moved. I'd like to echo discussion. I move the adoption of the committee substitute.
Any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 5, Judiciary? Hearing none, that committee substitute is before the committee. Senator Halpern, the only change in this committee substitute is on page 3. It's a clarification of the language in section D of this bill about what happens to money received by the state during a fiscal year that is subject to the expenditure limit, and what happens to money that exceeds that limit, and it is clarified that it would be deposited into the permanent fund. So this is the only change, is just a further clarification of the language. So any money that exceeds the expenditure limit that is not appropriated by the legislature with a two-thirds vote would go into the permanent fund. And that's the way the original bill was, but it's just a clear set of languages, I think, in section D. And questions on this?
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Senator Pierce.
Do we have or have we had a discussion from the administration as to their position on the bill?
The administration testified in State Affairs of the bill. Is there someone from the administration here today to testify? Basically, Mary Halloran did not want to restrict the use of the earnings of the permanent fund in a constitutional amendment. They'd rather do it by statute. They did not wish, there are certain sections in here that the request of the permanent fund board, which would establish the trust language on page number 1, lines 23 through 25, the administration is opposed to that language. They would rather the permanent fund not be established as a trust and that not be written in there. Basically, they like the fact that there's a budget stabilization fund, but they would rather not have it in a constitutional amendment. And I believe that's a fair assessment of the administration's position.
Well,
yes, ma'am.
I know that I sit on the next committee referral, but we've been having a problem up there that when we get into trying to talk policy rather than numbers, we end up never getting bills out. And I would very much like to hear the administration's testimony on this. I thought they were here Tuesday. I thought the Attorney General was going to testify Tuesday. That was my mistake. When he was here and then had to leave because we didn't have the meeting. But I would like to hear the testimony before we hear it.
Okay, we will have to arrange that. It will be brought up for the next committee hearing. Is there any other questions that the committee wishes to have? Okay. Senate Joint Resolution Number 5 will be before us again. Senate Bill 194, an act relating to judicial review of school boards, non-retention, or dismissal of teachers. Current law gives school boards the right to dismiss a tenured or non-tenured teacher under certain specified circumstances. It also gives the school board the right to subject a tenured teacher to non-retention after the expiration of the teacher's contract under certain specified circumstances. The school board may subject a non-tenured teacher to non-retention for any reason. This bill sets forth the procedure for a formal hearing if requested by a tenured teacher upon notification of dismissal or non-retention. The teacher has the right to a public hearing under oath with an attorney, as well as the right to cross-examine and subpoena. While a non-tenured teacher has no statutory right to a hearing for dismissal, the Alaska Supreme Court granted such a right in a 1973 case. We have Bob Manners from the NEA here, but we have a representative from Senator Adams' office, and I'm sure, Elmer, you would like to testify on this bill, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Elmer Lindstrom. I am an aide to Senator Adams. Senator Adams apologizes he's unable to be here, but he had a long-standing dental appointment. I do have some remarks that Senator Adams was prepared to offer. I believe they are essentially the same as your opening remarks, Madam Chairman. I would be glad to present them, or given your lengthy calendar, not at your discretion.
Questions? No questions from the committee? Thank you, sir, very much. Mr.
Thank
Manners.
You,
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Bob Manners. I'm with NEA Alaska. We oppose this legislation and would ask that the committee give our concerns serious consideration. From our perspective, this legislation has the effect of negating the current tenure law, and that the review on the record, in terms of the factual review, would no longer be required. Further, as we understand the legislation in Section 2, it would have the effect down the road of creating a dual system of tenured employees, which from our perspective may raise a serious constitutional question under equal protection argument. And thirdly, in our discussion with school boards associations on similar issues and other committees and other discussions during the session, we're not quite sure as to what the need is for this legislation as far as specificity. And so from our perspective, there is not a compelling need out there amongst the school districts as far as particular problems that legitimize this kind of legislation. So we would encourage that the committee not to consider it favorably based upon the fact that it does have the effect of diminishing the current tenure law. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Manners?
In the past dozen years, I'm unaware of more than five or six cases that have been tried de novo. Is my recollection an error?
Through the chair, Senator Rohde, that's the best figure that we could come up with in terms of the last 10 years. We believe there may have been five.
Senator Halperin, what this does is it eliminates the de novo section of this of the trial, which is a starting of a new trial for a teacher to appeal their non-retention to the superior court level, right?
That's correct.
And it eliminates that step in there. It eliminates the fact that de novo is spreading out the issues completely. Isn't that right, Senator Rohde?
Yes.
The entire thing is tried again before the court level, rather than the court level just saying it was a fair or unfair procedure at the administration level. Is that right?
That's correct. May I add one?
Yes, sir. You sure may. You have the floor.
The presence of the opportunity for the de novo trial currently under law, from our perspective, ensures a greater level of objectivity at the school board hearing level of any kind of a discipline or dismissal procedure. And so we feel that that has served both the interests of the employer and employees, and that most of these issues are resolved at the school board level, which is where they should be resolved.
Senator Halpern.
Well, does the statement that the court may not reverse a factual decision of the school board, does that, is, I mean, are there two issues there, or is that part of the same issue? How's it work?
I think that, again, through the chair, I think that's part of the same issue. We feel that the factual decision, whatever it may be, should be able to stand one more level of scrutiny if that's appropriate from the individual's perspective. We're talking about livelihood and the opportunity to follow a career in their chosen profession.
Senator Rody.
My thoughts, Madam Chairman, are that you're talking about, as Mr. Manor said, the most crucial decision you make with regard to someone's profession, and to deny them, and obviously there are very few cases that I recall, and to deny them those few people a trial de novo seems foolish. And it says here that if the decision was based on substantial evidence on the record, I'm not sure what that means. Is that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be even 50% of the evidence, just substantial. There could be, it could be less than 50% of the evidence could be supporting the decision made by the board, and it would have to be upheld. That doesn't seem to be a good way to handle these matters, and certainly is unfair to somebody who's brought before a tribunal like this. I'd have to pose.
What I think it's amazing is when I tried to get a de novo trial through the Senate last year in oil company tax disputes to go to the courts, nobody liked that because you didn't think it was fair. And now you're saying that you don't want to take a de novo trial away from an individual because that would not be fair. I don't believe we're being consistent. Are we, Mr. Manners?
I'd like to evade responding to that question.
I'm sure you would, please. Mr. Lundstrom, would you return to the table, please? Thank you. Of course, no one accuses senators of being consistent. Mr. Lundstrom, what is your prime sponsor, your senator's reasons for eliminating this step in the process, and what is the rationale behind the bill? I think that's what we're all trying to get at. We would like to accommodate you, but the committee wants to know why you're doing this.
Certainly, Madam Chairman. The purpose is very straightforward. In Senator Adams' mind, it's simply a duplicative and from an school administration's perspective, very costly procedure to have a de novo trial, which in his opinion simply duplicates what has already happened at the local level. The question of raised by Senator Rody, since the Superior Court may not reverse a factual decision and so on, substantial evidence, that's really secondary. Simply the de novo aspect is Al's concern.
Senator Halpern.
Well, I wonder what the effect of the bill would be if it didn't have in its operative section the second sentence.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Under AS 2210-020D, the Superior Court has jurisdiction in all matters appealed to it from a subordinate court or administrative agency when appeal is provided by law. The hearings on appeal from a final order or judgment of a subordinate court or administrative agency shall be on the record unless the Superior Court, in its discretion, grants a trial de novo in whole or in part. The court would still have the option of granting a de novo trial at the discretion of the court. And I don't believe that the senator would be deeply disturbed if that one sentence was simply removed from the bill.
Senator Howe.
Well, I've been trying to figure out what the necessity of the sentence was. I mean, you've got one is the procedure, but then the second one is the Superior Court may not reverse a factual decision of the school board if the decision was based on substantial evidence on the record. That essentially means that if the decision was based on substantial evidence on the record, even though the court finds that the decision was wrong, they still can't reverse it. At least that's the way I read it.
Madam Chairman, substantial evidence is legal term of art. I'm not an attorney, and perhaps somebody else could better answer that question.
It seems there's a distinction here.
I'd like to be convicted of substantial evidence.
Mr. Christensen, can you help the committee?
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Charlie Christensen. I'm the committee's staff counsel. At the present time, the Superior Court is required by this statute to grant a de novo trial to a teacher. If the sentence on lines 12 to 14 of the bill were deleted, that would mean that the court would still have the option of granting a de novo trial at its discretion. However, it also would be able not to have granted a de novo trial if it so chose. So this second sentence is necessary if you want to completely take away the Superior Court's discretion to grant a de novo trial.
Senator Rohde.
I don't understand the need for the bill. Under the logic that's been presented to the committee, it would be equally appropriate to cut out right of trial to anybody who appeals to the state. You know, a contractor, a service provider, a person who's displeased with the decision. I would oppose that in those cases, and I would oppose it in this. I don't see any compelling reason for the right of a trial before an impartial tribunal to be done away with.
Unless you're in Welka. Senator Hatton.
Well,
those were your words, not mine, Madam Chairman.
That's what's happened.
Do you best take that up with the other members of the Senate, Madam Chairman?
Senator Hatton.
If the court, what's the normal, okay, let's just back away. Are there other processes for appeal besides trial de novo?
It's Administrative Procedures Act process.
Well, but my point is,
where do you go when you get to the end?
No. I mean, what happens in any other administrative agency when they make a decision that's unfavorable to an employee and they want to appeal the decision outside of the agency? They fight within the agency, they finally end up going to court, right? Do they get a trial de novo on everything, or do they get an appeal of the decision?
Doesn't the court decide whether the process was fair or not? They don't make a judgment on the final decision, but they make a judgment on the process. If the process was fair and the procedures were followed, that's what the court judges. They do not judge the decision. They do not look at the facts of the case to judge a decision. They make sure that the process was fair and according to regulation and procedure. Is that fair, Mr. Attorney General? Seeing that he's here, we may as well use him.
It may be, General. I haven't followed the bill. I really can't.
The question, Madam Chairman, is there a right of trial de novo in other proceedings? And there is. Mr. Christensen would probably have to spend a little time with statutes to run down for the committee, but and perhaps he's done that on this bill. I don't know.
Madam Chairman, as a general rule, under the Administrative Procedure Act, a person is entitled to a review on the record. However, it's the discretion of the Superior Court judge whether or not he wants to do that review on the record or actually hold a de novo trial. So as a general rule, it's the discretion of the judge. A person's only entitled to a review on the record, but
so
the judge can grant that.
The teachers have something that the state employees do not have.
But this is going back and saying that they can't get it either. See, there are three positions in this situation then. Mm-hmm. There is guarantee a trial de novo, there's a court decision as to whether you have trial de novo, and there's a prohibition of trial de novo. Is that, am I right now? Is that what's happening? This is a prohibition of trial de novo, is it not?
The bill as introduced would be, Madam Chair.
That's Senator Adams' wishes.
That was the bill as introduced, Madam Chair.
But he's negotiable.
I would suspect that providing for review under 2210020D period would be better than current law in his mind.
Next bill. I understand there's not a difference anyway.
Do we have any more discussion? What is the wishes of the committee?
Next bill.
Are you making a motion?
No.
Is there anyone who wishes to make a motion?
It's your intention to move this bill.
It's my intention to do something with it, but I would like you folks to make the decision. Do you want to amend it? You want to think about it.
Well, my inclination would be to treat everybody equally, which would take out the middle sentence of the bill.
Would you like to make a motion and see how far you get?
I don't know if there's any support to do that. I would move that we strike the language starting with "the Superior Court may" and ending with "evidence on the record."
All in favor of that motion? All opposed? Motion fails. Is there another? Would you please tell your prime sponsor he has some work to do with members of this committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next bill up is Senate Bill 255. Senate Bill 255 is by Senator Kelly. We have a new CS just hot off the press on this bill. Mr. Attorney General, 25 days to go, guys. I mean, you know, if you want to hold this president's bill 24 hours, it's fine with me.
You know, there's a lot of people that don't really care.
Yeah, right. I've noticed that. It's selective, though, isn't it? Senate Bill 255 is a bill that creates the Valdez Disaster Arbitration Commission. Upstairs yesterday in the oil and gas hearing, Senator Kelly amended a bill to create an investigatory commission to the Valdez Exxon Oil Discharge Disaster or Committee. So I would think that the least thing we need to do here is make this compatible with Senator Kelly's wishes and make it the Valdez Exxon or the Exxon Valdez, however the name of that particular ship goes. What this is it sets up an arbitration commission consisting of members from appointed by the governor to serve at the governor's pleasure, also members of the commission selected by the American Arbitration Association, members of the commission appointed by Exxon Corporation, so you'd have two members of the panel selected by Exxon, two selected by the governor, and a fifth member selected by those four, or if they couldn't decide on some within 15 days, then that person should come from the American Arbitration Association. It has the duties of the panel. It has the arbitration procedures. It puts the control of the arbitration under, is it still under the Department of Law, Mr. Christensen, or have we moved it to the court system?
Madam Chairman, it's still simply under the control of the Arbitration Commission. It's not in government anywhere.
It's not in government anywhere. Okay. So, Mr. Attorney General, you wish to testify, sir?
Yes, I do, Chair. Senator Fakes, members of the committee, I have just received the committee substitute. I have reviewed it, but I think that it does not alter some of the basic difficulties that the administration has with the original bill. My comments will be the same with respect to the committee substitute. I would say, first of all, that the administration favors every effort that can be made to obtain prompt, inexpensive resolution of claims arising out of the Exxon Valdez incidents in Prince William Sound at the least cost to the claimants in order to resolve these matters, keep them out of the courts. However, we have some difficulties, substantial difficulties, I guess, with the bill in its present form, including the committee substitute. First of all is the fact that in order for such a commission to operate, or in order for arbitration to move forward, the arbitration panel, wherever it's placed and however it's constituted, is, it seems to us, going to have funding in order to get into operation. I realize that there are some provisions in this bill for awards of some of the costs of arbitration to be made by the panel, but even if we assume an expeditious carrying on of business, I would anticipate that it will be at least some weeks to some months before any substantial number of awards are made. It may be longer than that. In the meantime, this panel, this mechanism is going to have to be funded in order that people can travel, in order that they can develop forms, have files, have telephones. I assume pay the arbitrators during any interim period of time, unless we're assuming that they're all to be volunteers, which doesn't seem realistic. In any event, there's going to have to be administrative support, development of policies, claim forms, and the creation of machinery for it to work, even though it may be an expedited procedure. That simply is not present in the bill as it's presently constituted. Secondly, we have some concern that unless there is some indication from Exxon or other persons who may be the subject of claims, and incidentally that could and may include claims against the state of Alaska. There have been some lawsuits filed already indicating or asserting responsibility for some aspects of the Prince William Sound incident on behalf of the state of Alaska. So it may be that the state of Alaska is a target defendant or respondent in some of the claims that might be filed. Unless we have a good indication, it seems to me that whoever those primary target respondents are likely to arbitrate, then I can anticipate that such a panel as this might spend a lot of time, a lot of effort, and incur a lot of expenses, only to find out perhaps that there would not be any arbitration, that there would be no recovery against which they could make an award, and would never be able to recover any of the costs of their operation. This is a real and practical problem, and without a solution, I fear that we may be creating a expectation in injured parties that the machinery is there for a prompt and efficient, inexpensive resolution of their claims, when in fact that mechanism simply has not been created in a form in which it can work. We have some other concerns. A few of those include the possibility that since the state may be a target, it may be inappropriate for the governor to be appointing those arbitrators. There are, I would point out, other arbitration procedures in place which could be, with perhaps minor modifications, made to apply, either through the existing mechanism of the American Arbitration Association or under the State Arbitration Act as it presently exists. Might require some fine-tuning, but the mechanism is there for the appointment of arbitrators and the completion of arbitration where parties agree to proceed with that method. So in short, we are in concurrence with the concept of a prompt, inexpensive resolution of these claims without counsel, possibly, if that is realistic, but feel that the present mechanism in this bill, including the committee substitute, could not provide, in fact, that mechanism.
So if I could recap, sir, what you're saying, there has to be a funding mechanism. There has to be a fiscal note. And in order to have a fiscal note, it has to be put someplace, someone who is in charge of this particular panel.
I would say that it would have to be placed somewhere. We'd have to have some further idea as to the number of panels that were going to be utilized, the number of staff that it was going to require. Somebody could work that up, certainly. But we don't have that at the present time. The administration, if called upon, could work that up. But until we know a little bit more about what the thing really is to look like, I'm not sure that could be done.
Okay, so we have a funding problem, and that's multi-headed.
That's correct.
And the placement of this, so where this is going to sit or rest, or who's going to be responsible ultimately for this, needs to be decided.
I would say administratively, yes, it has to be someplace. Okay.
And you're concerned that there is no requirement in the bill, if I heard you correctly, for people to take advantage of this, for this panel to be used.
Well, in any arbitration, Senator Fakes, unless the respondent, the person against whom the claim is asserted, agrees to arbitration, there will not be arbitration. I suppose sometimes people negotiate in advance to enter into binding arbitration. That's done in labor management times. But there certainly would be nothing if a claim were filed against Exxon, hypothetically, under this panel, to require them to arbitrate. Perhaps they would. I just can't tell you whether they would be amenable to that or not. Then we created a machinery that's going to accept claims, process them, establish forms, spend money, only to find that it cannot carry out its function.
Okay, just the same way that if there was a claimant against the state, there would be nothing to require the state to participate in this panel.
That's correct. I'm not saying at this point that we would,
no,
if the state would or would not arbitrate.
Right.
But it would have to, I suppose, on a case-by-case basis, agree to use that procedure.
All right, then the third concern that you had were that there were other, or the third statement you made, there were other arbitration procedures within the system already that could be refined and used that would be more workable than this as it's currently structured.
That's my view, that some of the machinery is already there through the court system. There is a statute that provides for parties that once they reach an agreement to arbitrate can apply to the court, the Alaska court system, and the court will appoint an arbitrator. That statute prohibits the arbitrator from awarding attorney's fees. And since this seems that it may contemplate attorney's fees, I suppose that that procedure could be amended so that claims arising out of this incident could include award of attorney's fees. The mechanism is there and perhaps more workable there, again, if funded and given the staff necessary to make it work, than to create an entirely new panel. But that's judgment.
Okay, then committee staff just tells me there's also a federal arbitration under the TAPS fund.
That's correct. There is a procedure. The TAPS fund, claims against the TAPS fund can be resolved either by litigation or by arbitration. Again, the parties, I believe, have to agree that arbitration will be the procedure. Once the procedure's in place, I suppose that same procedure could be utilized if the parties agree whether the claim is under the TAPS fund or is directly against Exxon or if it's against the state of Alaska.
So basically what you're telling me is in all arbitration situations, the parties must agree to participate or it's for naught.
That's correct. And I think the reason for that is that in our system we have the guarantees of the due process and of the jury trial and things like that. And in order to get around that, the parties must agree to go into a foreshortened procedure such as arbitration. It deprives them of jury trial. It deprives them normally of most rights to appeal. Generally speaking, arbitration does not allow appeal unless some special arbitration provision is made. I think under the State Act there can be an appeal from an arbitration only in the event of misconduct by the arbitrator or established bias of the arbitrator. Otherwise, it's final.
Senator
Szymanski?
First question, are we putting this into temporary statute?
This is creating a commission. There's no statute anywhere. It's creating an entity.
It's not a temporary act.
No, sir.
Okay, that's what I was trying to. So it would go beyond the life of the Valdez incident. One.
No, it would be specifically for claims for the Valdez incident, and that's why I wanted to amend it to make sure that as it was yesterday in the oil and gas committee.
And while we have the Attorney General here on this, it sounds as if conceptually, you think that a vehicle for expediting some claims, this could be an avenue that some people may want, this type of arbitration process is a vehicle that some people may want to take. I concur with that observation. I was just hoping that maybe what you could do is refine your comments to specific recommendations on how we could modify or change this legislation. And even if it is moving away from what we're drafting here and going to what's already in the court system. But a couple points that were brought up by constituents of mine affected by this, which are, I guess anybody, they're almost all mine except for the ones that live outside the district.
You have the floor, sir.
Well, we got a lot of people that have fishing licenses in your district for some reason.
Senator Szymanski.
Okay. My question is that we don't provide in this commission, under this commission, the ability for an individual who cannot...
Hold on, please, sir. Senator Kelly, you may join us at the table, sir. I didn't see you walk in the room. You are welcome. All right, continue.
We don't provide for legal representation for those that cannot necessarily afford it. I was wondering whether or not that would be something that we would want to consider because of the circumstances individuals are dealing with. And because they would then have counsel that they could. Now, obviously, it says that they could be awarded attorney fees if they prevail in their charge. What I was wondering is whether or not we would want to modify this, and when we do fund it, to include representation costs for those that can't afford it is one question, and whether or not you consider that being favorable. And the second one was, there's a provision in here that deals with after they've had a settlement underneath this, a class action suit, my understanding would be that if they were, would have been part of a class action suit, that they would have still been, then they would be prohibited from being considered a party to that class action suit if it was settled 2-3 years down the road.
Senator Craig, Senator Szymanski, as far as the judgment of providing for counsel for claimants, I'm really not prepared to respond to that. I think that's a judgment that the legislature could make either way. I certainly don't oppose that concept. But having not thought about the long-term implications, I wouldn't, at this point, neither support it nor oppose it. As far as whether or not a claim under this or a similar procedure would bar a person from participating in litigation, certainly to the effect or to the extent that they asserted claims, or at least for types of alleged damages for which a claim is asserted in arbitration, I would expect that that would be final of the disposition of that claim. I suppose a person could file a claim under this procedure for one aspect of their damages and not another, and continue to litigate the other ones.
So,
a person's a herring fisherman and a salmon fisherman, I suppose if they arbitrated for their herring season but continued in litigation for their salmon, I don't know why that couldn't be done once the respondent agreed to arbitrate a portion of it. That would be a final disposition of that portion.
And I think that what you're saying is what is not well understood by a lot of people out there, that they could go in under this, seek relief, obtain relief for one portion of damage, whether it's one loss of one season of herring fishing, then that's isolated, they're compensated for that, but future damages of loss of herring or future damages of whatever they may be, that may be settled, they would still be eligible.
I would expect so, but that is also going to be a factor, I suppose, that the respondents are going to consider when they elect to be bound by arbitration or not be bound by arbitration. But let me say in fairness that we have some indication that Exxon at the present time is willing, prepared, and maybe moving forward on doing some of that right now. Representatives of Exxon met yesterday with Governor Cooper and his chief of staff, Gary Peska. They outlined their intended procedure with respect to responding to claims. They indicated that they would promptly be willing to start writing checks for some aspects of losses, and that they would do that without requiring releases from the recipients of any other damages. They also indicated that they were about prepared to start entertaining some types of claims, like the Prince William Sound herring season loss, that they would be willing to pay a partial payment and leave to a later time the resolution as to whether or not that was full compensation, even for that particular portion of their claim. So if that's happening, that's certainly very favorable. If that's happening, it certainly indicates that they might be willing to move forward with arbitration on a piece basis. So there is some movement that indicates that Exxon may be willing to explore just some of these expedited procedures. Consider that very favorable. That doesn't necessarily mean that this bill or this concept is not still valuable. After all, if they are willing to pay the first portion of the season's loss voluntarily, they may be willing to arbitrate the claim that this season would have been better than the last season or whatever. Excuse me.
Senator Alford.
Can they establish an arbitration commission without this bill?
I believe that under the existing State Arbitration Act, that the parties could apply to the courts for appointment of arbitrators, and I don't see any reason that under that bill that they couldn't apply for a panel of three, or of five, or of a single arbitrator, or of a single arbitrator for one claim and a panel of three for another claim. And I would expect that the court system would accommodate that, so long as the court system has is given the opportunity to create the mechanism to process these claims. Somebody's going to have to make the forms and do all the simple but necessary things that can allow this to even get far enough to carrying a claim to Exxon and saying, will you agree to arbitrate this claim? Mr. Snowden is much better prepared, I'm sure, to respond to what the court system is willing to do than I. I would much prefer, however, to have the court system have that mechanism than to have the administration have it.
Well, you're also a party in some of the lawsuits, as you said.
That's correct.
And so it would be almost a conflict of interest in some quarters for you to
be
involved in this. So
that's
The best thing we can do is strengthen the current law under the court system in order to set up an arbitration panel for the Valdez Exxon Valdez.
Senator Fakes, that's our present judgment, and something along that line that would provide clearly for arbitration, availability of arbitration, prompt, inexpensive resolution is certainly something that we favor very much.
Further questions? Senator Rohde.
Madam Chairman, just to get around the potential conflict of interest with the state, we could provide that the two members would be appointed by the Chief Justice rather than by the governor. And that would hopefully resolve that problem. The funding problem speaks for itself, and it would be possible to consider using all or a portion of the State Arbitration Act in either in place or to supplement the Uniform Arbitration Act.
I think that's what the Attorney General is telling us to look at. Right? Are there any other questions of the Attorney General? I would ask you, sir, to stay at the table, if you will, when we bring up Mr. Snowden from the court system.
Senator Fakes, I'll be happy to do that if he approves of that procedure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Will you sit with me here? I'd be glad to
see you. He doesn't really have that choice.
Madam Chairman, if I'm even close to next, I would ask that my testimony be deferred to the bill's sponsor has his chance to say whatever he might want to say.
Do you wish to testify?
I'll wait.
Okay. Mr. Snowden.
I just didn't want to get crosswise with the bill's sponsor, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, for the record, I'm Art Snowden, Administrative Director of the court system. Some of my concerns are very basic and don't go line for line with the bill. My initial concern, which I suggested to you the other day, was that an arbitration commission set up in the executive branch creates at least an appearance of conflict, if not an actual conflict. Whether you can or not set up a separate independent arbitration commission, not under any branch of government, certainly is up to you and open to legislation. But positing that you want an existing entity, that the courts of the legislature are the only two left, and I doubt you guys want to do it, but I'd be more than happy to have the legislature do it if they should so desire. That's my first thought. My second thought...
The court system is willing to volunteer.
We'll do it if you tell us to do it, obviously. And there is, you know, under the court procedures now, without any funding, if Exxon and a claimant came to us and said they wanted an arbitrator, we would just probably select an arbitrator from the American Association of Arbitration, let them go work out their own costs and who's going to pay for what in their agreement. If you want to leave it so unstructured, that's certainly possible, because that's the way a lot of arbitrations take place right now. Secondly, on the arbitration question, you asked if the only way to do it is voluntary, and it is not. Obviously, you can do mandatory arbitration. Problem with that, the minute you do mandatory arbitration, they can reject that arbitration and get a jury trial. So unless it is voluntary, there's going to be a second step. In both cases, the side that loses is going to show up at my doorstep. Therefore, we would suggest, obviously, that it be voluntary, and that if two people want to decide and settle an issue, that's the best way to get it resolved. And so we would certainly favor the voluntary mechanism. I bring to your attention, I'm not saying I'm for it or against it, but B in the CS talks about how people are appointed to this, and under the way that you set it up in your CS, what you're allowing is the claimant to pick two people and Exxon to pick two people, and they can pick a fifth. I might suggest what that provides is two people on each side that are biased. You're going to pick somebody who's biased on your side, and one person's going to make the decision, and you're paying for five. I might suggest, rather than that, the American Arbitration Association has a process where each side's allowed to strike names and say they want a panel of three. You're allowed to make strikes on either side. And what obviously it would appear that people do in that sense is strike off people who are biased against them. And probably a lot fairer than picking some people that may be biased as arbitrators. I just suggest this as something as a food for thought in the composition of any group. Secondly, I certainly agree with the concept that there should be no set number on a panel. It may be one in a claim of $100,000 or less. I think the American Arbitration Association used a rule of thumb, although I can't swear to it, but under $100,000, they provide one arbitrator, over $100,000, three. But something along those lines where the parties can decide the size of the panel, and that flexibility would also be good. if you expect us to go any farther than what we are already doing, and that is when somebody walks in the door, if they ask us to pick an arbitrator, we might go to the American Arbitration Association to find an arbiter. You might want to say how we do that. But if you expect us to do any more, such as creating office space, files, staffing until anybody can be paid. These arbitrators may not see any money for a long period of time. They generally work on an hourly basis, not on a contingency fee type of a situation. And they want to be paid. If you have a five-month arbitration and some person's coming up here to arbitrate, unduly prejudiced, the costs have to be spread out across the entire arbitration process to start itself. So I have no idea how the legislation wants to do it. All I can say is that the court will certainly cooperate in any way necessary. Senator Kelly's already whispered in my ears, don't use this bill, it's trying to get more money in your budget. That was not my intent, but I would suggest to you that you think very carefully about how you set this up, because there's no way that I can staff this, there's no way I have office space. If that's the type of procedure you're going to be providing. If you're just going to say, hey, go to the judge, and if you guys want to arbitrate, that the judge will appoint an arbitrator or will facilitate that, then I would say that's fine, we've done that, and we will continue to do that. I would also suggest, as the Attorney General did, that there are two acts already in place under the Federal Code of Regulations for Federal Arbitration and already a State Act, and you might want to look at those as incorporating them with some of the ideas in this bill. I think the concept is great. We don't want a lot of cases. Our courts are already backed up. We're hoping that arbitration can take care of many of these claims so that courts don't back up even further. We know that money's tight, and we will try to live in within whatever budget we get. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer those questions.
I have a couple here to either Mr. Snowden or to the Attorney General. You have the TAPS fund. It already provides for binding arbitration. Up to $100 million.
That's how much is in the fund for Alaska.
Okay. Does this kick in after the $100 million is spent?
This
arbitration process that this is setting up?
My understanding would be, Senator Fakes, that this would be the arbitration, could be the arbitration vehicle by which a decision was made that the TAPS fund would pay the claim.
But the TAPS fund has their own arbitrators.
Well, they provide, the TAPS fund provides that claims can be asserted through litigation or by arbitration. I don't know what their arbitration machinery looks like right now. Whether this, perhaps your question is different. Would the awards under this arbitration provision only start to be paid after the TAPS fund had paid out? Is that the question?
Sir.
I guess I can't tell you at this point how that will be treated. Exxon may view claims against it as being initially part of its initial $14 million share of the TAPS fund.
Yeah, see, Legal Services isn't sure either. They don't know how this interplays with the TAPS fund, which comes first, which pocket of money, or the pocket of money from the feds has to be used up first before you go to another pocket of money. Nobody seems to be quite sure at this point in time. They couldn't get the answers to those questions that legal counsel for the committee came up.
Madam Chairman, people
yes,
file simultaneously in the state and the federal, depending on different claimants, different claims. So there's nothing to stop various arbitration mechanisms to be operating simultaneously that go after different types of funds for different types of alleged wrongdoing.
But see, we already have a claim, a state arbitration system set up under the Uniform Act. So then I'm just wondering what this will do, what we already have. And that the Attorney General's comment is maybe what we should do is look what we already have, strengthen that in order to man for this particular disaster.
That's correct, Senator.
That was your focus,
that's
right?
That's a suggestion that I have made, that to the extent you have existing machinery, that it may be able to do a lot of what you want to have.
All right, rather than reinvent the wheel, strengthen what you've got on the books.
That's
or
correct.
Make it more specific
or
for
make
this
some,
particular.
Perhaps some temporary provisions to their temporary additions to the existing machinery just for this incident.
I will be asking the prime sponsor how he wants to go on this then.
Chairman, another thing you might want to look at is then brought out by ably by the committee members that there are some claims that have been reduced somewhat to certainty and there are other claims that are speculative at this time. What's the salmon run going to look like in 5 years, for example, and therefore aren't ripe for arbitration at this point in time. There was some language in here that says that people can go in on their present claims and hold open further claims against the state, so it's clear that they're not resolving all claims by settling a present claim that they have, because others may be too speculative to bring at this point in time.
Well, they talk about non-economic damages in here, too. I don't know what that is, and it's not defined. Senator Pierce?
Well, I have a question about the tax fund that would be Mr. Attorney General, in an earlier discussion that you and I had about the tax fund, it was my understanding that until all the claims that come in, since there's pot of only $100 million there, that until all the claims had come in, the trustees, I guess, would not start making payments out of that fund. Would we go ahead? Arbitration go ahead and begin now, and awards would be made, but they'd be contingent upon some percentage of the total. And there's only $100 million there, and if you've got $500 million worth of claims that everyone agrees are legitimate, does everybody get 20 cents on the dollar sometime 6 years down the line?
Senator Pierce, I think perhaps there's two different parts of that. When I indicated to you, and I did indicate to you, that it was my expectation that to the extent that claims were asserted against the TAPS fund, that if those claims exceeded the amount of the fund, or the amount available for this incident, $100 million, that I expected that the trustees would be unwilling to make a payment until all of those claims were resolved. That's my expectation. I haven't been told that, but I would think that they, as trustees, would have that responsibility. Otherwise, they may have paid one claim in its entirety and have no funds to pay the last claims. At the same time, there is nothing that prohibits Exxon from paying claims, either as a result of arbitration or as a result of their own administrative claims procedure, over and above or separate from the TAPS fund. And there has been an indication, at least, that we've received that they may be doing that. Whether they're going to then backcharge that against their initial $14 million responsibility of the TAPS fund response, that I don't know. But they have certainly not indicated that they would wait until all of the claims had been resolved before they would start making some payments, and in fact have indicated that they are moving aggressively to start making some payments almost immediately. They may be doing that today, for that matter.
Just to follow up, the way the TAPS fund is set up, is it only Exxon that can use $100 million out of that fund, as opposed to Exxon using 100 and Alyeska? Pipeline service
company using money. Well, I guess, Senator Pierce, that those may be labels that we're applying. The TAPS fund, of course, doesn't refer to Exxon or to Alyeska. The TAPS fund refers to a responsible party. The TAPS fund has a provision that the responsible party, or at least the initially responsible party, or the one viewed as being the responsible party, has a defense. And that defense is that if the fault, in fact, lies with a governmental entity, that they're off the hook. But assuming that that's not the case, then we apply Exxon as the label because they appear, at least from what we read in the press, to be the party that would be responsible under this situation.
I would suggest, Madam Chairman, that as I understand it, there's $230 million in the tax fund. Of that, first $14 million is paid by Exxon, the next $86 million can be applied toward this disaster. There's no information I have before me that anything above the $100 million, unless there's a way of especially increasing that amount, can be applied. But there's $230 million actually in the fund. Only $100 million total, including Exxon's $14 million, have been labeled for this disaster.
Please proceed. So there's no provision in the TAPS fund for more than one responsible party.
Senator Pierce, I don't think I can answer that question right now. It could be that under some concept of joint and several liability, that the purpose of the fund is to assure that there will be funds to pay for certain disasters. And I suppose, and we're only speaking hypothetically, that if some fault were found to be attributed to Exxon and some to Alyeska, there's nothing I don't believe that that would prohibit the TAPS fund from responding.
The $100 million is limited to one incident, not to various parties. And we have all the legislation here. Senator Pearson will be glad to give it to you. And I have all the how claims, settlement, adjudications are done, the discharge of oil from vessels, the whole thing on the TAPS fund is right here. And you have it in your packet, too. Mr. Christensen says it's all there. So the $100 million is not limited to pay off for one person. It's just one incident with lots of different people involved. For our responsible parties. Yes, sir.
I'm not sure the joint several would be available given the initiative that passed. Several members of the committee have outspoken on behalf of that issue, and I just it's come back to bite you.
It says the owner and operator of the vessel shall be jointly and severally liable for the first $14 million of such claims that are allowed. Financial responsibility for $14 million shall be demonstrated in accordance with the provisions of section 1321P of Title 33, where the oil is loaded. The fund shall be liable for the balance of the claims that are allowed up to $100 million. If the total claims allowed exceed $100 million, they shall be reduced proportionately. The unpaid portion of any claim shall be asserted and adjudicated under federal or state law. And it says the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Liability Fund is hereby established as a nonprofit corporate entity which may be sued and be sued in its own name. And it goes on from there. I mean, all of this is in your packets of information. Yes, Senator Halford.
Well, just a threshold question from Senator Rohde's statement. Does that joint and several provision survive the initiative last year?
I would think, Senator, since it's in the statute, in the federal statute, that it might well. But I certainly be very cautious about putting my final stamp of approval on that opinion without some careful review.
Are there further questions from the committee? We have met several members of the public who wish to testify on this bill. And because it looks like we need to work on the bill, best, if it's all right with the committee, get some members of the public who wishes to testify, and then we work with both the court system and the Attorney General's office and the prime sponsor. Senator Kelly, do you have anything to say right now? You've heard the gentleman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I didn't get an opportunity to hear all of Attorney General Daley's comments. I did have a meeting yesterday with the governor, in which the governor indicated that he was in favor of a binding, of an arbitration approach. He indicated that he was going to come up with a package of bills relating to the spill and the aftermath and the beforemath of the spill, but it might take some time to get that package in. And he indicated that his people were all busy working on this bill, and I think he's absolutely right. They simply haven't had the time to work on the legislation that they feel may be necessary to help alleviate this problem in the future. Nonetheless, you know, I think that we got to continue forward with our work, and as his proposals come forth, they can be tied into ours, or they can start on their own merits depending on what they are. So I would hope that we continue working on this and move forward with it. The idea behind a separate commission entirely was to treat this as one incident. And I would hope that Exxon will be liable for the costs of this arbitration commission. And if you start at the very beginning with $0 in your bank account, and if you spend $100 million, then you go to Exxon and say you owe $100 million, you know. And this is part of the penalties, and not the penalties, but this is part of the
responsibility.
I would think if Exxon were to agree to the arbitration commission, and I understand that they're leaning towards that approach, that's how it would be. I'm not sure that you wouldn't have a higher conflict of interest by going into the judicial system, because you already know there's going to be judicial claims involved. There are judicial claims involved. You know, and you can have a tougher way to handle the cash. You know, it wouldn't be as clean, I wouldn't think, if you go to the Judicial Commission, as it would be just to set up a separate entity for this particular problem. Anything the committee wants to do in that nature is fine with me. I would hope the committee would proceed. Obviously, the bill is rough, but I think that you can straighten it up. I did notice, I haven't seen the committee since before I came in here, I noticed that damages means any personal injury or property damage, including economic and non-economic damages. Frankly, I've never seen the word non-economic damages. I think personal injury, property damage, and economic damage is about what I had in mind. I guess we could all say we were non-economically damaged, all 520,000 Alaskans. And there'd be a lot of arbitration claims. So I don't know how you want to define that, but certainly if somebody's been economic or property damage or personally injured, certainly that ought to be arbitrated. But, you know, the only thing I can say is that, you know, I hate to dump a bill in this kind of shape on you, but I think it's important. I would like maybe to move ahead. The other thing about the TAPS fund is that the Attorney General mentioned earlier, the last night in committee, perhaps the night before, those nights of years are all running into each other, Drew, that they're going to introduce a law in Congress that would expand the $100 million to the, it could go to the full $230 million, you know, if Ted can get, Ted, Frank, and John can get that worked out. But I don't believe any credit that Exxon is going to be limited to the $100 million. I mean, there's $100 million there, but there's going to be several other dollars that are going to be paid to for damages and cleanup costs in the state of Alaska. So whatever you can do to get this thing, you know, going is fine with me. And I'm not certain you want the judicial system, because they have an obvious conflict of interest with judicial cases that have already been filed and will continue to be filed. You know, you might want people to have to take a choice. You know, it's going to be one or the other. You know, you can't have both.
Senator Hopper?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the conflict of the judicial system. That confuses me.
Somebody files a suit for damages, and the judiciary would really rather have them go to arbitration than go through the process, right? This is going to cut. If we have to go through the judicial system, it costs a fortune. Not only is it going to cost you a fortune, it's going to take years.
But what is the conflict of interest or the conflict for the judicial system managing the arbitration system?
Because they already have one.
I mean, I would think that would be the logical place for it. But I'm missing something.
So am I, you know. I mean, I have no idea what the judicial system does, except that if they've got cases in there, then they've got to make a decision as to whether or not they should be arbitrated or adjudicated. Who makes those decisions?
Yes, Mr. Snowden.
Madam Chair, under the bill, they'd have to be arbitration would be voluntary. If people went to arbitration, they wouldn't have a case. If they did not volunteer for arbitration, they would probably file a suit. But I would make it clear on the record to the panel that I'm not asking for this. If you don't want to give it to me, I'm not going to feel at all bad about this, and I want you to know that I'm not pushing for this arbitration to be under the judiciary. In fact, if there was any way you could do some independent thing, just going to the American Arbitration Association, asking them to set up the mechanism, put it under no branch of government, that'd be fine with me.
But the executive branch is going to be a defendant in some of these cases. I mean, that seems to be where the real conflict is.
Well, I think the whole idea was somebody, in order to arbitrate, you have to have, it's got to be voluntary on by three sides, right? In this case, you know, those representing the injured parties, those representing Exxon, and an independent person. I mean, you know, you could get one person, but who's going to trust that? Somebody said something. There's no reason to have five. I mean, three will do just as well. One from Exxon, somebody else that is not in Exxon, that's not on Exxon's side, those two get together and pick somebody they feel is relatively neutral. And we'll come down in the middle. And I think the idea was that the governor would be the person that would be opposing, you know, or that could be counted on to oppose Exxon in the selection of the arbiters. That's the only reason he was selected. I mean, there's no sense in naming Exxon. But Exxon probably won't agree unless they have some say on the arbitration.
Now, I think we're in two different areas. One is who selects the state's arbiter to start the process and then select a neutral arbiter. The other is where this thing administratively ends up.
Just for the bookkeeping.
You've got to keep the bookkeeping separate if you want to get the cost of this arbitration repaid by Exxon, I would think.
Yeah, but who does it?
Who's going to arbitrate the cost of this arbitration committee for Exxon?
We have to appropriate money, and then we would hope.
We would anticipate getting it back.
Right. But the point is, do we place this whole entity in the executive branch? So it's managed through the executive branch, or is it managed through the judicial branch? Because if it's managed through the executive branch, then essentially it's managed by a defendant in some of its cases. The judiciary
I mean, I was trying to figure out what the conflict was. I don't think there was a conflict with the judiciary. There's nobody in the judiciary that's suing Exxon or being sued by Exxon, I don't think.
If that's the case, then obviously you put it in the judicial branch, or it's administered in the judicial branch.
That's what we're talking about.
The problem is, if the Chief Justice selects the two arbiters that supposedly are on the state side, maybe you have the governor choose them and then put it in the judicial branch.
Well, you have the governor choose the one or two or four.
Right. Just for administrative purposes.
Senator Rowe.
First of all, I don't believe there's a conflict, and the commission has to be put either in the judicial branch because they make decisions, or has to be independent. The difference is not unlike the small claims court and the district court, where you have people voluntarily going in. Anybody in small claims court can demand that the formal rules be used. And that's really what we're doing here, is saying this is a different forum, and we can't take away someone's constitutional right to due process of law and trial by jury. And so it's either it must be in the judiciary or it must be a separate commission. We can look at what they've done in war claims commissions, because we've had a lot of wars and a fair amount of claims over the past 40 years, and they have worked out a mechanism, and they generally follow what Mr. Snowden suggested, and that is several impartial members to make a decision. It really doesn't make sense to have a group of adversaries from each side debating what other adversaries representing claimants are doing. And the idea of having three members of the commission, and they call them by various names around the world. So certainly we could look at those in England and the European countries that have done similar things. Lastly, with regard to non-economic damages, I think that's an important definition, because, for example, subsistence by its very definition is non-economic, and to require or rather to allow claims by the people of Chinigga, for example, would require that we have that non-economic language in there.
You might want to use the word subsistence as the non-economic damages.
Madam Chair, in response to that, we could probably draft a long list of things, but at one point you have to leave it up to the court, to the commission, to the finder of fact to determine what is a valid claim and what is an invalid claim.
Let's look at, as I understand it, Exxon has to agree to arbitrate or there's no arbitration.
Right.
Now Exxon, if they say, the heck with it, I don't want to do it, then everybody goes to court, right?
Yes.
State, federal courts, and we're backed up for years. We've probably got 2,000 cases. The state's going to end up paying for those. That becomes a real mess. So it's in our best interest to get Exxon to agree to arbitrate, right? Now, whatever that takes to get them to agree to arbitrate, and if it takes that they have to have one of their people on the panel, as long as that's balanced by some of this, anti-Exxon person on the panel, who the two together can choose the neutral arbitrator, that's fine. But remember, whatever you do, you've got to get Exxon to agree to arbitrate. Otherwise, they can just sit around and stonewall these folks for years, and every attorney in Alaska will smile.
Now, the people right now in the situation, as far as I'm concerned, who are going to make out like bandits are the attorneys. Everybody else, including the auditors, are not going to do as well. The federal fund, the TAPS fund, does not include non-economic damages, just for the information of the committee. The TAPS fund arbitration panel does not include non-economic. It's very specific, and they define it very clearly. Further discussion with the prime sponsor before we go to members of the public. Senator Smansky, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Senator Kelly, you're not hung up on who administers it, so
no.
If it was that, so we're pretty much we say judiciary ministers and administer it with appropriate funding to go along with it. Otherwise, they're going to throw a tent up. Fiscal note's going to be necessary on it.
Madam Chairman, I can't give you a fiscal note until I know what this arbitration thing's going to look like, as the Attorney General said.
Mr. Snowden, relax.
Okay. Next.
Those are famous words, though.
Next, the other issue that has arisen related to a potential conflict of interest, if the sponsor, I believe, agrees, the state could be in a position of having a conflict of interest of appointment. So rather than having the governor make the appointment, having the Chief Justice make the appointment, you agree to that as well?
Well, I don't really know that much about it. You know, if you're going to have Exxon have a person on the panel to get them to cooperate with it, then you're going to have somebody out there that's going to be against Exxon, just to balance that one representative off. And does the Attorney General advertise, does the Chief Justice advertise in the paper? Who doesn't like Exxon?
The governor is pretty graphic.
But my point is, I mean...
The governor's an attorney.
But the Chief Justice has no stake in this. I mean, you know, Exxon has a real stake in it. The Chief Justice has no... You've got to have somebody appointed to counterbalance Exxon that has a stake in
it. It sounds like we may be back to, if we want to neutralize it that way, we want to neutralize both sides, Exxon and the government side. And then we go back to what Mr. Stoughton suggested earlier, maybe a viable option is an appointment under the procedures by AAA. And you would then have a panel established like AAA.
Well, wait a minute. We haven't established yet who's the person that's going to oppose Exxon.
Okay.
You're establishing that neutral body with two of them.
Okay, so all I'm trying to sort out here is that...
Any claim?
Yeah. Each panel is different.
Mr. Snowden, you're dying to tell. You're interrupting.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman.
Just go ahead and tell the committee what you want.
Madam
Senators, let Mr. Snowden
obviously, if Exxon appoints a panel member, so does the claimant. So the claimant picks the other panel member. Between them, they pick the third under the scenario that's in the bill. Under the American Arbitration Association is both sides get to strike people they think would be biased against them, and you end up with hopefully three neutral members of the panel. So there are very many ways to go forward, but obviously if the defendant, which may be Exxon or maybe the state, it may not be Exxon, picks a member, the claimant would pick another member. Between them, they would pick the third. The Chief Justice wouldn't have to pick anybody.
Okay. I knew that you were going to come up.
And Art's going to be looking for a job come September.
So I'd like to continue on if I could, because the other two points that have come up in the discussion, and maybe back to the, is an isolation, put a clause in here that isolates the claims presented to being those claims and not allowing the panel to go beyond that in extinguishing anybody's individual right to recover from anything that isn't before the panel. Now, is that acceptable to you?
Well, it's not going to be acceptable to Exxon. You know, I mean, they're not going to say, they're not going to let you get away with saying, because you're only going to get cancer 10 years from now, so I'm going back and claim it more. I mean, you're going to have a settlement, Mike. I mean, that's what arbitration is about, right?
On a particular issue that's brought to the table, but if they expect an individual to sign off on a claim today on Herring Row, and they get compensated for Herring Row today, and 5 years from now they're out of business and destitute and wondering what happened to their fishery, should they be written off 5 years from now?
I'm in no position to answer that.
I'm in no position to answer that, Mike. You know, my point is this, that you're going to have to get Exxon's attorneys involved. They're going to have to agree to whatever the committee wants to do, or if it means nothing, they walk away and there's no arbitration panel.
Okay, it may be a little elementary here, but let me read to you what the federal system is. See how you like this. A disputed claim may be submitted to binding arbitration if the parties to the dispute so agree, under the terms and procedures agreed to by the parties. Now that's relatively simple, gentlemen. So each particular arbitration, they agree to arbitration, they agree to the terms and conditions at that time, they agree who appoints the arbitrators, they agree to the terms and conditions, and they sit down and they begin the arbitration. So maybe we allow them to do it rather than trying to spell it out so clearly in the bill that we're so confused over.
But that's already in existing state law.
This is how the federal government does it.
Yeah,
I mean, we don't want to copy them, I'm sure.
No, the state already has.
No, this is the Office of the Secretary of Interior. This is the TAPS. This is how they will arbitrate under the TAPS fund.
But the state has a general arbitration provision that is almost exactly like that.
Senator Rohde.
There is a difference. You're talking about two very large formidable adversaries here. And in this case, we're talking about a lot of local people who are fishermen or in some other way have had their livelihood affected and are not large, formidable legal adversaries with all the tools that that they might have. So you do need to set your forum so that those people have an equal ability to present their claim as counterbalanced by the expertise that that Exxon is going to bring to the table. So I think there is a difference.
Well, Senator Rowe, I'm going to disagree with you. I've been to arbitration several times with my little company, and I get to pick an arbitrator, and the other side, which might be Spinard Builder Supply or some big person out there, gets to pick theirs. And together, you get the third person, who's hopefully a neutral person, and then the arbitration process begins.
But do you have legal counsel?
One time I did, and one time I didn't.
Your problem is covered in Section 5.
On legal counsel?
I'm just throwing out the federal system, because we seem to be stuck on the processes of who appoints who and how the mechanism works. Mr. Christensen, the existing state law is appointment of arbitrators by court. If the arbitration agreement provides a method of appointment of arbitrators, this method shall be followed. If no method of appointment is provided, or if the agreed method fails, or for any reason cannot be followed, or when before the hearing an arbitrator appointed fails or is unable to act and a successor has not been appointed, the court, on application of a party, shall appoint one or more arbitrators. See, but in both instances, they want the affected parties to pick the panel first. If all else fails in the court, in the state system, then the court system will appoint the arbitrator. Mr. Snowden?
I would point out that the state act does not allow for payment of attorney's fees. Exxon certainly will have its attorneys present, and if you want that little fisherman to have an attorney, you'd need some amendment to allow for the payment of attorneys.
Well, that was going to be my last but not least question. Would you have any problem with putting an account in here to pick up those people account?
Don't we have reasonable attorney's fees for prevailing parties and percentage of prevailing fees in there somewhere? We've got that in here.
Who's supposed to be in there?
That's only if you prevail, right?
Yeah, well.
Let's say you walk in the door and you just want to know whether or not the case that you know that you want to sit down and make sure that you're not signing away your life.
Right. Okay, but you have to understand how attorneys work now. If you don't have to win or even fake it, you know, they'll take on everybody in Alaska as a client. We had that case in the legislature. You know, we were sued last year by a former attorney general who's in the public good. He's all concerned about this, and now all of a sudden we've essentially taken care of the problem. Now he wants to get paid reasonable attorney's fees.
Well, but
for something he did the public
all right,
good.
Well, let's go back and go back to Mr. Snowden's company. Is it possible to adopt an attorney like they do? I don't know if you see it in the movies, but I don't understand your
question. The public defender?
Public defender thing where they get paid X dollars just like a public defender does?
Or
they're not going to get rich on it?
Yes. I'm not able to answer that. I'm assuming you could set a fee schedule within any bill that you wanted to pass.
But I mean, so they don't get a piece of the action. They just get a flat rate.
I don't know how these things work, but I assume that if the guy has a good, strong case, he's going to find himself an attorney without too much trouble. And the weaker the case, the attorneys use their own judgment. If you reach a point where you don't have to have a case at all, every attorney in the state and in the United States will be jumping on this one. They get, if they don't have to win anything, they get something.
But see, that's just it. We don't want the case to be a situation where there's a big incentive for the attorneys to walk in the door and get 30% of what the arbitration award is. We want to set up a vehicle where they can have representation, but not necessarily become too overly they don't gain a lot of weight on the deal.
Yeah, then we limit contingency fees to 5% or something. Now we're getting down to some real basics here. Gentlemen, could you talk through the chair so that we can all hear, including the reporter?
Excuse me, Madam Chairman, I was asked about what I've seen out there, and this is just hearsay, that a number of people have already signed up attorneys, already have contracts with them, setting out a payment of some type or contingency or whatever it may be. But I am not privy to any of the specific provisions of the various agreements that are set forth, but under present law, I'm sure they're all quite valid.
Manager.
Senator Kelly.
Manager, I don't mind if attorneys make money. I mean, that's what they're for. They have to live. They get educated. They have to live a terrible lifestyle in order to make that money. Because you like fighting other people's battles, you know. I don't mind attorneys making money. I just don't feel it's fair for an attorney to make a third of a fisherman's settlement on a deal like this, which in a lot of cases is going to be a pretty simple arbitration. I mean, considering you got one party that's already subject to change probably, but already admitted liability. You know, so, you know, I don't mind a reasonable attorney fees in the system, but, you know, it's the fisherman that suffered the damage that should get most of the return.
Well, let's just see if we can work on that.
Senator Rowe.
I agree with Senator Kelly, and the simpler we make the arbitration, the less need there will be for counsel on behalf of claimants. And we've got to bear that in mind, and that will ensure that you know, the vast majority of the money will go to the claimants, that they won't need special representation in as many cases as that is possible. In some cases, they will have to have counsel. But I think that's why it's worthwhile to spend a little time on the commission, so that there is as broad an access to that commission as is possible.
Anybody else have anything to say? Thank you, everyone. Mr. Yankee, please. Bill Yankee, you wish to testify, sir?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Bill Yankee. I am a Prince William Drift salmon gill netter, and I expect to have some form of claim, or maybe claims, and may be able to use the functions of this legislation. And the area of the bill that I have the problem with is where the claimant can bring the claim, but the person to whom the costs are directed doesn't have to play the game. And it appears like that may not be a problem on the short term, because I think Exxon has admitted liability, and my guess is that they would be better off to play such a game right now. But I also expect that fishing type claims may last for years and years, and at that point Exxon's lawyers may be more reluctant to arbitrate these, and it may be more difficult to get them to arbitrate.
Questions, Mr. Yankee, Senator Hoffer.
Well, I don't know that we can force arbitration constitutionally. Now, the Attorney General's already left, but
everybody's got a right to a trial.
And particularly on an occurrence or after the fact from an occurrence. You know, I think that is a problem. I understand what you're saying, but I think it's probably something that we can't surmount in creating this bill. We can create a format that hopefully there can be agreement to use, but if the company decides that it wants its trial in court, I think it gets it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir. Senator
Kelly. I'm going to move here briefly, but I don't think he saw the section on future claims, which wasn't, I don't believe, in the original bill, which significantly impacts what he's talking about. You know, you can make a settlement this year having no idea what the future effect of the oil spill is going to have on the fishery 3 years or 5 years down the road, and I think that that's sort of covering the future claim section.
You know, and I agree with you, Senator Kelly, but I think they have a really good point, because nobody knows for sure, and I think the fishermen and everybody there has a right to be afraid. They are fighting the largest oil company in the world. And Senator Rohde's comment where they have a battery, I mean, they have office buildings full of attorneys, and these fishermen do not. And so from that point of view, you know, I'm on the little guy's side, the fisherman's side, and I know you are too. So anything we can do to strengthen the opportunity for folks to come for future claims, I mean, even if we might think that's a pie in the sky,
that's the purpose,
I think they should be able to have that.
Madam Chair, if Exxon is going to have to pay $300 million in damages, you know, I want $280 million to go to the fisherman and $20 million to go to the attorney.
I agree.
Not vice versa.
I agree, sir. I agree.
That's what this whole thing's about. You guys work it out. Too, right?
Okay, thank you. And Senator Kelly, we will work it out. And what I want to do is have it done and worked out by Tuesday so we can move it. Okay, sir?
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Mr. Sun, I believe it was, it mentioned that that you could require a binding arbitration, but they would always have the opportunity to opt for the trial by jury.
Right.
I personally think that would, I would feel more comfortable with that, and let them go public and actually go for the trial by jury then, but at least attempt to force them into binding arbitration.
Okay, what, Mr. Yankee, what we'll do is I'll ask committee counsel Mr. Christensen to research the availability of binding arbitration on Exxon for us under the U.S. Constitution and under our state constitution. I think Senator Halford's right. There may be some problems, but we will research that and have a report for the committee. And if the committee wants, I can have a CS prepared, several different versions for the committee to look at, and we'll just see what's legally available to us.
Okay, how's that? I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming to testify. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on CS for 255? May I have a motion from the committee to adopt the CS so that we have a working document in which to work? I don't think it's so terribly wrong that we can't adopt the CS. Senator Pierce?
I would move that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 255 Judiciary.
Without objection, CS for 255 Judiciary has been adopted as a working draft. Okay, members of the committee, what I hear them saying, or what I hear you all saying, is that we'll put this in the court system as an administrative function. We need to have a funding mechanism. We need to look at mandatory binding arbitration. Do I understand the committee wanting to look at that?
Well, we can look at it, but I think it's...
I mean, we have to look at the legality of it is what I mean.
There's two problems with it. One is the right to trial, and the other is ex post facto.
We need to look at the existing State Arbitration Act and see if we can't do something to strengthen that or to focus this particular disaster within that act rather than setting up a brand new mechanism. Senator Rody?
By noting that this will be set up in the court system and you know, allowing them to do all the administrative work and then referencing the our Arbitration Act, which I've used in practice, and then just noting anything that that we think is necessary to give small claimants a better.
Right. We were talking about that with Mr. Yankee. We're very concerned about not only now but in the future. The fighting the big office building full of attorneys is we're all aware of that.
And last but not least.
Yes, sir.
It's certainly one in the legislature.
It would seem to me that some form of some provision in the bill should authorize the court system to provide counsel, which we talked about, but in what form, to individuals who are seeking to deal through this, but that counsel can be based on the way they do public defender counseling.
Through the chair, the Office of Public Advocacy or the guardian ad litem or legal services would be more appropriate than public defenders.
Well, that's what I mean. Whoever those people are, we'd fund them through the vehicle in order to provide that counsel.
Would legal service, Alaska Legal Services be an appropriate entity to fund?
They do civil work.
Yeah.
It needs to be somebody that does civil work.
Somebody does that type of work that people can go to get counsel on.
Okay. What about a grant to Alaska Legal Services?
Well, we want to write them into the statute and then fund it as part of the fiscal note.
Something to look at.
Yeah.
Something. Okay. You'd be willing to. I'd rather do that almost, give it to that agency
I would rather we let it be competitive than we pick somebody that's going to get a grant.
Senator Pierce, you agree with that?
Well, I've got legal services budget, and I would agree that it should be competitive or that we allow some leeway.
Well, the court system provided then through whatever vehicle, and if they got to go out there, that would be probably the way to have the court system select the representation. And then they go out to competitive bid or whatever they have to.
Anything else? Senator
Chair, this, and maybe Senator Rody can help me with this, but one of the things that I would think would make it difficult for Exxon to go along with arbitration, particularly when you don't have any bar on years later going back in future claims, is if they go to court and settle it through the court system, they have a complete and very full record of exactly what issues were decided and what might have been left open. Where arbitration, if it's going to have that kind of record, is going to be pretty extensive arbitration. So I think that's something that's going to cause us a problem with our future claims consideration before we're done.
Through the chair, the
the file that will be left after the arbitration is done will note the exact nature of the claims and the evidence to support it. While it won't be as extensive as a trial transcript, it will be very specific, and I'm sure that that Exxon could note the specifics that it would require.
Pretty tight.
Yes, okay. There shouldn't be that difficulty in the future in terms of double adjudication.
Okay, if there's no more discussion right now, what I'd like to do is, if you have any other ideas this afternoon, tomorrow, we're going to be working on this. This will be the focus of the office staff's work. Please come by the office, and then what I will plan on doing is present the committee with several different options on Tuesday, working with the prime sponsor on this piece of legislation and the Attorney General and Mr. Snowden, okay? Senator Brody has agreed, I believe, to do Senate Bill 204 in subcommittee, the Corporation Code. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
And Senator Szymanski, I was hoping that as part of your learning...